Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. We've gotten a lot of questions about a piece of my advanced cardiac arrest management talk, and we also have done a podcast on it on the ED ECMO podcast, and the topic is the nurse-led code. And so I wanted to do a specific episode because I really think this should be done everywhere immediately. You should change your practice if you're not already doing this, and I wanted to talk about the logistics of it and how we make it work and how a friend of mine makes it work. And that friend is Joe Hot Badger Bellezzo. He is the chair of emergency medicine at Sharp Memorial. My friend Zach Shiner and Joe make up two out of the three, with me being the third, pieces of ED ECMO, the ED ECMO podcast and project. And Joe and Zach have been running nurse-led codes at their shop for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. So he's the perfect person to talk to about it. Let's get right to it. Who are you and what do you do?
My name is Joe Bellezzo. I am an emergency physician. I'm the chair of the emergency department at Sharp Memorial Hospital in San Diego, California. It's a community hospital, non-academic.
Yeah, and Joe's a good friend of mine. And together with Zach Shiner, the three of us do ED ECMO. And the topic we're going to discuss today, the nurse-led code, it was a topic done on ED ECMO already, but I want to expose it to a broader audience. I want to hit some questions we've gotten that weren't covered in the podcast, and there was no better person than Joe Bellezzo because Zach Shiner wasn't available.
Damn it, dude.
So, Joe, how long have you folks been doing the nurse-led code at Sharp Memorial?
So we started this in 2012, soon after we started our ECMO program, and mainly because as we were doing ECPR, we'll get to that later, but as we got into doing ECPR, we started realizing that running a code efficiently and doing a good resuscitation from a doctor's and a nurse's point of view, you needed both. And as we transitioned to the nurse-led code, we found that even the non-ECMO cases were much better run and much more efficient, and we actually had better return of spontaneous circulation. We had better outcomes when we used this nurse-led code program.
Absolutely. And I'd been doing this for years, but I never thought to actually give it a title. I had just every code I had been a part of, I'd offloaded a lot of the responsibility to the nurse, who was actually at the foot of the bed writing everything down because they just knew what was going on, and that freed me up. And then when you and Zach put out the podcast, I'm like, wow, we should codify this. We should actually make this policy or at least guideline, and we did just that. And so pretty much right after you guys started talking about it with me, I said, wow, we got to put this into writing because they have something here. The act of naming it was so empowering to the nurse involved that I found it really, when you actually make it part of your departmental framework, people get excited.
Well, let me give you a nugget of actual data. So if you look at our cardiac arrest recovery rates from before we started this in 2010, those recovery rates, I'm talking about out-of-hospital arrest, neurologic recovery, you know, recovered a neurologic outcome, our rates were in the 6-7% in those patients that came to the ER. After we started this ECMO program and after we started this nurse-led code, those numbers jumped to 18-20%. And then we thought, well, it's the ECMO. And then we went back and excluded all the patients that got ECMO during moving forward. And if you take all those out, the numbers stay exactly the same in terms of return of spontaneous circulation and then neurologic recovery. It's still in that 18-20% range. So it's not necessarily the ECMO that was the biggest deal. It was the culture change. And the biggest thing we did was add this nurse-led code.
Yep. And just for the skeptics in the audience, a lot of other stuff changed when
they really started optimizing cardiac arrest management.
But this, I imagine, has to be definitely part of that increase in neurologically intact survival.
Sure.
So, Joe, why don't you tell us your system and then we'll discuss mine. Tell us about the nurse leader and alpha doc, what they do and what their responsibilities are.
So we have an alpha doc, and we called it alpha doc because we also by, you know, default have a beta doc, and that's the ECMO or the line doctor. But, you know, aside from ECMO cases, we happen to call the alpha doc as the doctor running or at the head of the bed responsible for airway management. And then after that's done, that doctor actually leaves the room and goes out to find information on this patient, because that's what we really need to know now. Is this a patient who we should continue resuscitation on? While that's happening, we have a nurse who's assigned well ahead and trained in advance on doing running ACLS, nuts and bolts by the book, running ACLS. And so there's a nurse that's at the foot of the bed just outside, sitting in front of a computer and a timer, and calling out each individual component of ACLS.
Okay, and really, what does that encompass? If you had to really break it down to its small parts, what are they doing on a minute-by-minute basis?
So they are the ones who are ordering shocks, ordering drugs at appropriate intervals, ordering rhythm checks, if that's what we're doing. And so as things happen minute by minute, that nurse will call out, okay, we're going to shock in 3, 2, 1, and the shock will be delivered. They'll say back on the chest, and they're the ones running the whole thing. So that frees the doctor, you know, gives us this, you know, cognitive relief to focus on other things. For the alpha doc, that's going to be figuring out whether or not this is a patient that we continue resuscitation on.
All right, let's really get into this. So the patient's in V-fib. They've been shocked. They're still in V-fib. Will the nurse leader actually call for the antidysrhythmic, or is that an alpha doc call?
Nope. Nurse leader will call for it. And what the alpha doc does is give the approval on a yes or no. So we always have the ability to trump what the nurse code team leader calls for if it's clinically appropriate. You know, as you know, Scott, we might be running a code and ACLS might call for a very specific series of events. And for a lot of different reasons, we may defer from that series of events. And we always have the authority to do that. But if you don't speak up as the alpha doc, the nurse will run the code much like an autopilot on an airplane.
All right. Is there any other responsibilities your alpha doc takes on now that they've had the cognitive freedom of not having to deal with that other stuff?
Nope. It's head of the bed, airway, and then fact-finding journey on whether or not this patient continues resus.
All right. Let me go through my system, and then we'll talk about the variance between them and any other comments we could go to. So we didn't call them the alpha doc when we first started this. We had a nurse leader and a physician leader. It's a democracy, and it pretty much splits down the same lines as yours, but we actually have the responsibilities really in boldface. So the first responsibility is epi administration. And so the nurse leader is giving epi every 5 minutes until we have an arterial line in. Once the arterial line is in, the nurse leader is calling for epi every 5 minutes if the diastolic blood pressure is less than 40 with compressions. And if at the 5 minute mark it is above that level, then they hold the epi and we don't even have to be a part of that additional advance level. And if you're curious about that stuff, then check out the previous podcast on MCRIT. So that's one. Two is they announce 30 seconds before a rhythm check is due. And that spurs our defibrillation nurse to pre-charge our defibrillator. So, and it also lets everyone know a shock's gonna be coming soon. So if you're doing stuff that's gonna preclude a shock, now's your time to speak up and say, hold shock, because we're doing something like we're putting an ART line in. So that's responsibility number two. Responsibility number three is they actually call for the rhythm check. And now this is slightly tangential, but so important. And this is ACLS. This is not Joe and I going super advanced. There is no pulse check in ACLS. There is no pulse check in ACLS. There is a rhythm check. And only if the rhythm is a potentially perfusing rhythm, meaning it is like something that could potentially generate a pulse, only then do you waste the time on pulse check. And this is so frequently missed when I go observe codes. But this is not us. This is not cutting edge stuff. This is standard ACLS. They should all be rhythm checks. That's the language you use, Joe, as well. I know you know this stuff, but I think a lot of people out there don't. So they call for a rhythm check, and we have the defibrillator right in front of both the nurse leader and physician leader. They're both looking to quickly verify the rhythm. And if it's either V-fib, V-tach, asystole, then they immediately call for CPR to start again. So that's responsibility number three. Responsibility number four is they serve as the resource for anything anyone else in the room needs. So you don't have to ask 15 separate people. It might be a new nurse. You don't know their name. It might be a new doc. The nurses don't know because they're a brand new intern. No one has to ask anything of anyone else. You ask the nurse leader, and then they figure out who the best person to accomplish the task is. So if you need a pressure line set up for an A-line, you say to the nurse leader, hey, I need an A-line set up. And then he or she will be the one figuring out who's the best person to do it. If you need a drug that's not in the room, you want some Esmolol, you don't ask the pharmacist, you ask the nurse leader, because you ask the nurse leader everything, and then they will talk to the pharmacist. And this allows you to look at one person, you know their name because they introduced themselves at the beginning of the code, and you don't have to worry about closing the loop because the nurse leader is going to close the loop. This leaves our physician leader to do a few things. They make sure the airway is done. We, unlike Joe, are at a academic program, so we have tons of residents. There's going to be a resident at the head of the bed, so our physician leader's at the foot. So they're making sure airway is taken care of, that there's end-tidal CO2, or there's some plans of getting something more definitive if they're just being ventilated with BVM, for instance, like a lot of these patients from outside are. So they're going to handle offloading that. They're going to make sure the ventilations actually being administered are slow, shallow, and there's full release of the bag. They're going to do at some point an ultrasound exam or supervise an ultrasound exam to figure out if there's a immediate cause of the arrest. They're going to figure out the information and code status, just like Joe alluded to. And then they're going to try to think about weird stuff that diverges from standard robotic ACLS. So, this patient's renal. They just missed the dialysis today. Okay, we're going to call for something out of the ordinary from standard, you know, progression. Let's do calcium and bicarb. That's their job. So the nurse leader's handling the stuff that's by rote, and the physician leader's handling the stuff that's slightly divergent. For us, that means if they're in VFib or VTAC, they've persisted past the shock, it's going to be the physician leader deciding on the antidysrhythmic choice. But just as you say, the nurse leader sparking them probably to remember to give an antidysrhythmic. Which one do you want? Okay, well, that's going to be a cue to think about it. And then the fifth thing is just along those lines. They are a consistent spur based on how long the arrest has been going on, based on what else is going on, to everyone in the room to think about stuff. So if the arrest has been going on for 45 minutes, the patient's 80 years old, they were asystolic, they might be the spur to say, hey, folks, should we think about stopping this resuscitation? Because they probably have the clearest mind in the room because they have an overall view of everything and they're not test saturated. So that's our method. Joe, what do you think, and what are we doing wrong?
No. So I agree with everything you just said. Point of clarification back in responsibility one, you said that the nurse, or you're calling them the nurse, what do you call it? The nurse leader?
Nurse leader and physician leader of the code.
Yeah. And you mentioned that they deliver the epinephrine. At our place, we have a separate nurse who's doing the medications.
Absolutely. They're not pushing the med. They're calling for the meds. You're absolutely right for that clarification, Joe.
Yeah. So your nurse leader is really the focal point thought leader of what's happening and running the code, wrote ACLS plus all the things you just described, and the physician has the ability to intervene when they want to diverge from that rote ACLS.
Yeah, if you really want to think about it, then the nurse leader is system two and the doc leader is system one. Yep. And they're looking for insights. They're looking for heuristic response to the uniqueness of this arrest, something that's going to be different, while the nurse leader is just methodical and standing by the existing guidelines and making sure everything happens on time and perfectly.
You just said a bunch of big words I don't understand, so can we move it along?
Yeah. Sorry, dude, for that. Okay, so I think we're pretty much on the same page on this. The question we always get asked at Reanimate is, where is the evidence? I need an article. I need a research study. I need something to go back to my leadership to be able to push this, what sounds like a great idea, through.
Yeah, as you know, there's no evidence out there right now that says definitively that this results in better patient outcomes. But I can tell you, and you know this too, Scott, doing a code this way has changed my practice. And as I said at the beginning of this, we have some unpublished data that suggests that it actually really does work.
We felt the same thing. We feel the codes run better. We don't forget stuff. But even if none of that was true, just the chaos elimination and the empowerment of the nursing staff would make this worthwhile.
So there's a secondary effect that we get, this intangible benefit. When we are doing these, the nursing staff really, they really grasp onto this. They love having a very alpha sort of role in codes and not just following commands. And they really love the leadership role of this. And I think it really changes culture in the department. It's got a huge team effect that it builds on.
Absolutely. And if you really needed support because you're afraid, like, oh no, this is extending our bounds, remember, everyone in the room is ACLS trained. ACLS trains you to run codes. If there were no docs there, you'd still be well within your rights to run an entirely nurse-run code without any doctors in the room. So this is within your skill set. It's within the allowance of your practice. So you shouldn't worry about that. at all. I think one of the reasons we made our roles so clean is there's some nurses in our department that are scared of this role. This is a lot of responsibility in their mind. And maybe it actually is a lot of responsibility. And as a result, we don't ask them to do anything that relies on remembering ACLS, that relies on thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna freeze up. So the five responsibilities we ask them to undertake are all ones that we pre-brief them on at the beginning of the code, just in case they've forgotten. And there really is nothing you have to remember. Give the epi every 5 minutes. You're the one with the clock. Call for the rhythm check, you know, at its prescribed time. Call for the pre-check of the rhythm. And then just act as a resource for assigning roles. So there's really no fear in our ask on the nurse code leader.
And just remember, you're not solo here. You're not out on your own. The physician's still standing next to you, whether they're, you know, running, gathering the airway, or whether they're gathering information. Either way, they're right there. It's sort of like the nurse code team leader or your nurse leader is kind of like an air traffic controller. You know, they're not flying the actual plane. We're still doing that, but they're sort of guiding us. They're our eyes and our ears as we're task focused on the resuscitation itself. So it's a bit like an air traffic controller. Don't be afraid. You're not the one actually flying the plane.
I love that. Absolutely. It's a fantastic analogy. And you've mentioned something that also is something in our shop, which is the physician leader could override anything based on the circumstances. So if it's time for a rhythm check, but they want to keep going for some reason because they want to give one more drug before the next stopping of continuous compressions, then there's no fight about that. So,
happens all the time. It might be like often in our case, it'll be putting in an arterial line in the groin. I've got needle in the groin. And then the nurse doing her thing will say, okay, we're going to shock in 3, 2. And I'm yelling at, no, we're not. No shock right now. And that just halts that process while I'm getting the arterial line. We'll go to the next round and we'll shock on the next round if necessary.
Absolutely. And now on the other side, in terms of regaining control for those roles, the only people allowed to stop compressions are the nurse leader, the doc leader, or the ECMO line doctor if it's an ECMO case. So if the airway person says stop compressions, everyone ignores that person because they don't get to make that call. If they want to make that happen, because they feel the airway for some reason is more important than continuous compressions, they have to ask the doc leader, can we stop compressions now? But they don't get to make that call.
I will actually take that a step further. At our place, the alpha doc, since we always have an alpha and beta doc, and we're doing ECMO in most of these cases, or at least we're putting in lines in these cases. And every single arrest, we have a line doc putting lines in, mainly, you know, just to get that arterial line to guide your resuscitation. That is our only doc that's allowed to stop chest compressions. The alpha doc isn't even given that. We don't put that in his or her wheelhouse, because if they're up there at the airway, they might be trying to stop compressions because of an airway, and that's not acceptable.
Yep, that makes total sense. And like we say, our version of the alpha doc, the physician code leader, they're at the foot. And sometimes it's not time for rhythm check, but I've noticed the end title has popped up from 15 to 30. That's a patient. Let's see what rhythm they're in. Well, it sounds like we're on the same page, Joe. Let's just talk. Is there any variance in how you're running this system when it actually is an ECMO case, or it sounds like you're doing the same thing in both circumstances?
Every single time it's run exactly the same way. And here's why. You run a code on an unfortunate 85-year-old nursing home patient that's full code, and you happen to be running the code. If you do it every time the exact same way, you're going to do it the right way when the 50-year-old comes in with their V-fib arrest that's recoverable, the one that's too vital to die. That's the patient that you're hoping to gain in all of this. That's the patient we're going after. But all those other patients that come in are our opportunity to learn the rote behaviors that make everything successful. And the only way to do that is by practice.
Absolutely agree. The only variance we have, and it sounds similar to what you're doing, is we stop all shocks as soon as we've made the decision to actually cannulate these patients. And this is something we see often when we teach the course, is we don't get across enough and people are still shocking as folks are trying to dilate vessels. And so shocks stop when ECMO starts. The procedure of cannulating, you just stop shocking at that point. And no more stopping of compressions for rhythm checks and all that, or unless you're convinced that the patient has gotten a perfusible rhythm. But basically, you just continue compressions until the patient's on pump.
All shock stop until I've fully cannulated. I agree with you there.
Yep. All right, Joe, is there anything we missed?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I can't thank you enough, brother. And I hope to have you back on the cast soon.
Dude, reanimate on. Love it, baby.
Yeah, we'd be pitching it, but it's all sold out. You guys got to wait for R5.
R5.